welcome to another episode of the Beer Opinions Podcast. My name is Pat Berger, owner of Kaiser Tiger and Patty Long's. And not with me for the first time ever is Bruce White. He's not here, so we can't introduce him. He made the dubious decision to go to his job instead of doing the podcast. I think, you know, we all know how we feel about this decision. Well, except his dad who's listening, who's probably like, probably a smart move, son. But all the rest of us are like, what the fuck, Bruce? Your job, really? The thing that pays your bills? Beer Opinions, you know, doesn't pay anything. Can't believe he chose his job over us. But we do have a guest, of course, because you don't want to listen to me babble on for an hour. So in his steed is a special guest from up Randolph Street, Mr. Gary Valentine. Gary, how are you doing?
We are getting there. How are you, Patrick?
I am excellent. I was trying to think of how to introduce you. I want to say, you know, beer connoisseur, Siebel grad, beer buyer for the Goat Restaurants, a international man of mystery, and what else? You are heavily involved in a lot of the beer fests, and this past weekend, Harvest Fest, that went on Fulton Street. Welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure. We also have a new man behind the controls, Oliver. Oliver Berger, no relation to me, but I think we are brothers from another mother who happens to share the same name. I don't know. But hopefully we have some much improved sound quality. I know I've said this before, but this time I mean it.
Ooh, it should, that sounds good then.
Yes, it should sound better. Please reach out to me if it doesn't, which you always do, so I don't even have to ask you. All right. Well, Gary, I wanted to kind of concentrate this episode of Beer Opinions on a subject that's near and dear to me, and I think also, you know, to yourself, because I consider you a bit of an expert on this, and that is beer festivals. We are coming up to the granddaddy of them all this weekend, the GABF. I'm not. No, I'm not going to it. Are you?
Oh, no, I'm exhausted.
You know, I'll be honest, I've never been to the GABF. I know you have. I don't know. It hasn't appealed to me. I prefer Denver when it isn't jam-packed with crazy beer drinkers. But, you know, I understand it's a very good time outside the festival.
Absolutely.
It's, yeah, but the festival itself is kind of packed and
it is the granddaddy, and that being said, it's developed this amazing draw over decades, you know, and you don't get to that point and keep maintaining unless you're doing something very awesome. But I agree. I like getting to Denver. I like being able to go to a place that sells beer and actually have a beer as opposed to it just being, I can't even get in here.
Right. Yeah. Everyone says it's the party outside the festival. That's the main reason to go.
Yes. My wife and I did an event. Was that 2 years ago where we actually rented a house and we had private parties there for just our friends in the beer community. And it was pretty exclusive. We sent out private invites. We had food demos. We had food every day. One, you got to eat in Denver. And while the city is growing at an amazing pace, there's still not a lot of places to eat breakfast. So everyone's got to eat. So we had folks over to the house, and it was kind of neat. We saw a lot of our mutual friends that were able to actually enjoy being in Denver, as opposed to just going there to work an event, which is the only reason they've ever gone there. I believe our friend Will from Revolution, this is 25th year going to GABF.
Really?
That alone.
Wow.
I mean, think about the amount of funding and plane tickets alone that he's just to Denver and back just for this one festival. So this is someone that has more history there than most of the employees of the Brewers Association.
Yeah, right, yeah.
So that's kind of neat.
That's very neat. You mentioned your wife. We should mention you are married to newly minted Iron Chef, Stephanie Izzard. So in case people think it's weird that you're doing food demos,
I think food and beer just hand in hand. It's very similar to a lot of things that you've focused, between Patty Long's and Kaiser Tiger and your other ventures. You have to, have that balance. It can't just be about the beer. It has to have, something that's, whether it be secondary or foremost. And I know that you've managed to find that unique balance where they both really come to play together well. Two kids in one classroom. And the way that you've set your infrastructure and developed your business, it really is these two kids are playing together and growing together and nourishing. How long has Patty been around now?
10 years now.
Yeah, 10 just years. Had that 10-year.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Let's stop talking about me. No, go on.
Yes.
but yeah, people get intimidated about pairing beer with food. I find it a lot easier than, everyone thinks wine and food is the ultimate pairing, but really, I think it's easier to pair beer with food.
There's, one of the things with us is, with my wife and myself, with Great American Beer Festival specifically, and the reason that we chose to do that house was, like I said, people have to eat. There's lines everywhere. They have things to do. They're there to work. So we were able to provide them with a venue, give them a couple bites to eat, give them some. We didn't have any high gravity beers. We didn't have anything crazy. You're not going to see, the big gravity beers out there. It was just a fun little time to hang out in the backyard and actually enjoy being there, have a bite to eat, wash it down with the beer, and then go, because of course they've got to work the entire time they're on the ground out there.
Right.
And we're seeing that a lot right now with festivals where folks that are, they've got to go into town for this, and it's like it's a work trip. They don't get to, enjoy some of the places that they used to really love coming in town, because it's a major capital investment for the brewery owners and the breweries themselves to take people off the floor. The transport cost, the housing cost, the per diems, and also once again you're taking someone off the floor, so that's a big investment. To be able to send folks to town, and you got to make it worth more the while by having side events, and where are you going to do those now?
Yeah, I mean, people want us to do stuff on Saturdays all the time. I'm like, I'm sorry, we're all working. I don't have anybody. I don't have, my entire staff is on Saturdays.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
But talk about someone who has elevated food and beer. Your wife. I mean, Girl and the Goat was the first. What would be considered fancy dining? I mean, I don't know how you guys describe it. It's not fine dining because it's not like I have to wear a tie or anything, but it's Iron Chef dining. I mean, she's freaking Iron Chef.
It's just hybrid stuff.
She
loves it when people grab because we have pork shanks on menu. She loves it when people just grab the pork shank with their hands instead of poking at it with a fork. and that's eating.
But, 10 years ago, that was the first, elevated dining spot I had gone to that had had not just a decent beer list, a pretty incredible beer list. And now, you used to go to these places, these Michelin-starred restaurants, and, to Michelin's credit, they're starting to recognize beer, but they're giving these stars to places that were serving Bud Light and Miller Light, and you're shaking your head going, fuck? You have 4,000 wines on the menu, and the only beer I can get is fucking Miller Light,
Well, and this is, just to localize it to the Chicago market, that's a huge credit to Michael Roper, to yourself, places that have really said, hey, we need to step this food level up to a different tier, because that's just the direction that also separates us.
That's true. I always point out Revolution as being one of the first brew pubs I went to that the beer, the food matched the beer.
But also, we're talking Rev Brew Pub. That's 6 years ago, I believe
that's, at least, right?
Yeah, I believe that's about six, might be seven,
maybe more.
Point.
Yeah.
But and so that being said, we've watched this over the past decade really develop in Chicago at an amazing, amazing pace. And we're like, some of us are sitting back like, holy crap. Like now people, like you mentioned, the Michelin guys and girls, they're now looking at beer menus. 5 years ago, 10 years ago, they would never even blink an eye towards those menus. But that trend started.
Yeah, it wasn't on their checklist.
No, absolutely not. And that started. It's,
they're banging people for the quality of their coffee and not even looking at the beer list.
Well, we've seen many amazing some of the brew pubs that have opened up are putting out amazing quality product. And of course with various beer focused restaurants. Also, Publican was probably the first on the strip down here.
Yeah.
To really elevate that level.
But yeah, you got to talk about Publican when it comes to food and beer. Yeah.
I go there because I know that what he's going to have on menu up there is something that it might not fit my menus. But I know I'm like, oh, wow, he picked up that case. I want to go try that.
Right.
Because that's something that I really just want to enjoy that, get some oysters. That sounds great. All the time to me.
Shout out to Adam Vavrick over there at Publican. He's the beer buyer there now and good friend of all of ours. Love Vav.
His birthday is yesterday.
I wished him happy birthday on the Facebook.
I think he's like 47.
Yeah, he should be. He's fucking 35.
He's 35.
Yeah, and he was bitching about it yesterday online. I'm like, go fuck yourself. Do you have any idea how? I don't even remember 35. It was so long ago, But God bless him. We love Vav.
But back to events. So, GABF's the granddaddy. There's several other ones around the world. Look at what Mikael has done with the Copenhagen situation. Holy cow.
Yeah.
He's taking that thing worldwide.
Yeah. That's been on my list to go to for years. I've also not been to that one. What's your favorite beer fest going on now?
I'm not allowed to have one. You know what?
Come on. It's like children. We all have a favorite one.
You know what? I think I've come kind of full circle on some things, and I've started just enjoying having beers with friends. And that to me is an event. So say festival or an event. I mean, as far as festivals are concerned, we here in Chicago alone, we've got Oak Park, what Gary Kanin and Peter Crowley have done down there over the past...
Yeah, that one's really grown.
Over a decade. Yeah. I love that. I love that I can take the Green Line train 15 minutes west and have this nice little homegrown feel, mom-and-pop sidewalk, Oak Park, the home of Frank Lloyd Wright. So there's a lot of amazing architecture and little things like that also in that community that people don't even see. But you just kind of walk around downtown and drink beers and eat food and listen to music. That's wonderful. Of course, you can't go, to bring up Peter Crowley again, but you can't go without mentioning FOBAD, the Festival of Barrel-Aged Beers, which is year 15 this year.
I know. And yeah, that's it's got to be the biggest beer festival in Chicago now, right?
I don't know the math on it. I will say that probably has the most tackling fuel as far as draw, just because... I don't think there's a there. I mean, of course, it's specifically on, barrel aged beers.
It is a lot of barrel aged beer.
So
yeah.
That being said, it's a lot of very dense product and liquid. And those beers are delicious, but that's a lot.
It is. I spent last year's drinking Haymarket Pilsner in the back room.
I believe that's exactly what I did. Oh, I can't keep up.
I know. I'm too old. I spend a lot of these beer festivals looking for low alcohol lagers
because,
I don't want to fall over.
There was one brewery that put one in a gin barrel a couple years ago. I found myself enjoying that a little too much and had to switch over to ciders.
Gin barrels have starting to become popular. I mean, yeah. It really does come through the gin flavor, the juniper, all that. We had the gin pony pills here.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
From Half Acre. That was a killer beer.
The Half Acre. And that being said too, Half Acre's annual festival. Were you up there for that?
Their
dock party thing?
Kids got in the way this year, but I was at it last year.
Yeah. But that being said, they just opened their spot up on Balmoral. It's an amazing facility. Just hands down. Great place to go and visit. They've got a great little back garden area. And they have potential to have some very amazing events out there. And for year one of them having it at their new facility, it was kick ass.
Yeah.
They, I'm sure,
I haven't eaten at the new pub yet. I know the food's amazing.
I haven't either.
Again, not something you would have said about any brewery opening a restaurant 5-10 years ago, you know.
And that being said, too, it's there are events happening. At this point, there are events that are happening. There are events happening last weekend in Chicago that I didn't even know about.
Did you go to the 312 dock party at Goose Island?
I was there.
We got crushed at Kaiser. I guess they stopped letting people in at like 7. They all came over here.
So with that being said,
thank God. Goose Island.
10 years ago when it was the dock party.
Yeah.
Which evolved into the block party. Yeah. So that just shows that evolution. So to give everyone a little recap, the Goose Island dock party used to be invite only for, it was buyers, friends and family, maybe 500 heads. And they would have bands on the dock, the loading dock, you know, where you back the semis up into to load out.
I mean, the first time I went, they just had a DJ,
They had a Vienna Beef.
Yeah, the Vienna Beef truck. It
was a cart. A Vienna Beef cart and you can't go wrong with Italian beef sandwiches.
It was sweet.
And that was great. So that's turned into something that, like I said, year one was, I'm sorry, not year one. The first years were under 1,000 people. This year they had 20,000 heads out there.
Was it 20,000?
20,000.
Holy shit.
And that's a tribute to the way that the Chicagoland community has developed into really being a more beer-focused community again. I say again because, you know, back in the day, you know, very beer-focused, of course. And we've gone through some, you know, with you know, Prohibition. We had that fire thing happen. That wasn't good for anyone. And then Prohibition. And then only the big.
Well, and
big
then we
players.
Had the dark ages of years without a brewery.
Absolutely, and
until Goose Island opened, we hadn't had a brewery in the city since 1979.
Yeah, so and we're talking about Peter Han.
Peter Han was the last one.
Peter Han, which by the way, I think they were pumping out about 1 million barrels per year.
They were big, yeah. Meisterbrau.
Meisterbrau, but they were doing 1 million barrels a year in 1977, and they were down in 79.
Right.
So that just goes to show you that any given Sunday, you got to really know the business aspect and really stay on top of the direction that you're going.
It also shows that once you get to that level, which we're seeing a lot of craft brewers get to right now, that higher level of competition and, you know, stockholders and all that stuff, you know,
well,
you're either growing or you're dying.
And that absolutely. And you can't, there's no middle ground there.
No.
I mean, the operating cost, hell, our taxes are not going down. Are yours going down? Mine are going down.
No.
I don't think mine are going down.
Really? In Chicago? That's shocking. No.
It's a surprise.
Yeah, yeah.
And that being said, too, not to, you know, I love Chicago. It's my home. But, you know, we've seen some folks that decided to move out of town, so we have less folks living in Chicago now than we used to have.
True.
And we have more events.
Right.
So, you know, thankfully we've had a little bit of a shift in tide, so now we have more folks that are focused on beer. At the same time, these folks are more educated on beer as well, thanks to, of course, whether it be Cicerone, Siebel.
I mean,
your local beer establishments.
Yeah. I mean, we're home to both of those institutions, which are just, you know, doing everything to educate people on beer.
You know what? You asked me about my favorite event.
Yeah.
And actually, to recap on the Goose Island. So Goose opened in 1988. The Clybourne facility, which became, you know, their brew pub before opening their production facility down on Fulton. And they used to have an event, their Belgian Beer Fest.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
I loved that event. That actually, for me...
I worked it a few times when I worked at Flatlanders. We would send beer there. It's a long time ago.
Hang on a minute. Oh, man, I can't believe you just brought up fucking Flatlanders.
I know, right? Yeah.
but since Goose opened in 88, how many breweries do we have now in the city of Chicago? And in 88, by the way, there were zero beer events in Chicago.
Right. So,
like, absolute zero. Well, one, there were no breweries. Two, there were definitely no beer events.
This is where we need Bruce numbers, but I think... In the city limits, there's 80 or something, right?
That sounds accurate.
In Chicagoland or something?
That sounds accurate. And granted, some of them are kind of doubled up where they're, you know, they're contracting and doing things like that.
Right.
But no, there's that shit ton.
Right.
That's the technical number that you'll look on. If you look on the website, it says shit ton. I believe per capita, one, we have more commercial real estate for brewing than any other city in the U.S. That includes
Lagunitas
315,000, and the Goose Barrel Warehouse, which is upwards of 160,000. So right there, that really skews the curve.
I think we're producing more actual beer than any city in the U.S.
More, we are pumping out more liquid. Once again, that's because of certain
Lagunitas,
major facilities.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we have, as far as breweries per capita, we're probably, I would say, in top five. I know Portland and Seattle are really cranking out some stuff as far as the breweries per capita. But we've been
Oliver
top
says
five
we have 71 breweries, so we were close. And Burbs it says 116, but I think that's an old number.
Well, four have opened since you pulled up that number.
There you go. Yeah.
I mean, that's – and but the same thing goes for events. Like I said, going from 88 to now, even with this incredible growth rate of breweries within the city limits, you know, any given Sunday, there's a different event now. So how do you pick and choose? I'm going to go over here or I'm going to go over here. Here's the cost benefit of doing this one. Here's how this one's great. You know, and then, you know, you bring up the for-profit, the non-for-profit.
Yeah.
There's all these different variables in there.
Let's talk about that because, you know, there's a lot of them. And I start to wonder, are these being done to promote beer or are they being done to make money? And I guess the answer is somewhere in between. Some are trying to make money, some aren't. Some are for charities. But you know, if you're interested in starting a beer fest in Chicago today, Gary, what are your chances of making any money on that?
I'd say go to Michigan.
Yeah, they have their fair share of beer fests as well.
As far as making money on it, it's pretty easy if you incorporate certain people into it, especially if you're on the for-profit side and you're willing to put up certain banners. There was an event, first year event, once again, that I knew nothing about. A buddy of mine gave me a text a couple weeks ago, and this was not over the past weekend.
Oh, okay.
And I'm like, I know nothing about this. No one knows anything about this. And it was Chicago Bears, Bears focused.
Okay. Well, I know the one in Soldier Field.
Nope.
No.
Exactly.
I don't know it.
Yeah. It could have had a better turnout.
Yeah.
You know, I did not make it up to that one myself, but you know, you did not see, you didn't see any breweries in Chicago that are under, 5,000 or even 10,000 barrels per year. You didn't see any breweries from Chicago that are under 50,000 barrels a year.
At this festival?
You didn't see any breweries from Chicago at this festival.
So it was basically...
It was just a Chicago Bears launch party. They decided to shut down the street. And once again...
Yeah, that's not a beer festival.
No, but... By definition, city licensing. So if you ask that question about how do you set this stuff up in Chicago, you have to pull a festival permit, especially if they were on a city street, a major city street. And you know what I mean? So that technically is considered a beer festival. So that goes into that lump category. I think it's like anything. There's a right way and a wrong way. If you have a great event space, go back to FOBAB. FOBAB started, I believe that we can check with Peter on this math. I think there were about 20 breweries at the first FOBAB. And this year, I mean, there's definitely going to be over 300 served beers there.
Yeah.
And that, that's saying something. There's only two entries per brewery. So that alone means there's 150 minimum breweries there.
Was the first FOBAB at...
It was at Wrigleyville, I think.
Yeah, Goose Wrigley, right?
Yeah.
And then it moved to the Plumbers Hall?
Yep. Plumbers Hall, which is right behind Kaiser
Tiger.
Right
behind us right now.
Right behind Kaiser Tiger.
God, I wish it was still there. That would be nice for me.
You know what? that building's seen some shit.
It really has. I took my kids to some amateur wrestling there. Well, not amateur, professional wrestling.
Oh,
I guess.
Absolutely.
But It was that the one the smashing Billy Corgan. Wrestling. It was great.
That's hilarious.
Oh, kids loved it. But yeah, everything goes on in that Plumbers Hall.
But I think that like that, not even Plumbers Hall. I mean, anywhere that you have, you know, a couple thousand square feet, and you have the, because I guess define what a festival is.
Yeah. Would you say the location is the hardest logistical part of putting a festival on?
I would say the accessibility of how do your guests get to and from is a major factor. You remember when FOBAB was down at Bridgeport Arts Center, which I feel is the perfect venue for.
And it's a beautiful venue.
For,
yeah.
You know, a festival, a barrel-aged beer. It's an old five-story timber loft, south Bridgeport, Chicago. So, you know, a few miles south of where we're sitting now on Kaiser Tiger. And beautiful streamlined view of the city skyline.
Yeah.
You know, the timber frame had a skylight ceiling.
Yep.
Everything about it.
You get like a 90-degree
really
view
bill.
Of downtown. Yeah.
Guess what the bitch is? You can't get out of there unless you have a driver that's already picking you up, or you're going to walk to the Halstead bus,
right,
which is about a mile.
Right. There's no...
You're fucked.
Yeah, there's no train.
So, yeah, it's... So the accessibility... you know, so how
so
am I getting
So that goes
home?
Into the location, but then securing the location, you know, that's no big deal?
Oh, no, it's always a big deal. You got to let these people know, hey, here's what I'm doing. This is... And get... You know what? There's a couple aspects here. It's beer, which is a liquid.
Mm-hmm.
And you have ice, which is a frozen liquid, which is going to melt. So you're talking about a lot of how am I disposing of this water from the ice alone? You know, beer is going to get dumped on things, spilled on things. But the ice alone for you know, how am I going to transpo that? Then you got to talk about how much ice do I need? No brewer, the number one thing, one in two things that brewers never want to fucking hear. One, I've got to show up to set up for my event 3 hours before the event starts. And two, we don't know where the ice is.
Yeah.
Because guess what? Without that ice, that beer can't be at the serving temp that they want it to be. It's also just going to pour a foamy keg and, you know.
Ice is civilization, right?
Yeah.
Remember Mosquito Coast? Obscure references.
That's what it's about.
Yeah, all right. So what would you say is the hardest part? Let's go back to that. You have a beer festival. What kind of insurance is needed? Because you're getting, you know, thousands of people drunk, right? I mean, that's the purpose of this.
Absolutely. It's depends on occupancy.
Yeah.
You know, so it depends on what that building has. So certain places, they have their own insurance, and you can piggyback that. Mm-hmm. But other times you have to provide your own insurance.
Right.
And so within the city of Chicago, that's a huge fucking permit to pull. So you can piggyback an existing liquor license, which better be a clean liquor license, or else they're going to red flag you and say, hey, well, we need to talk about this aspect that has occurred. But you really, I mean, that's all in city. And that's that big cluster of the permits you need, whether it be a festival permit, an event permit, whatever. And as long, and then that's what you submit to the insurance, and you have to be bonded. You have to say, hey, I'm going to have, you know, 1,000 people, or I'm going to have 10,000 people over this amount of time. And then it goes into the logistics of saying, here's how much a person's going to be served over this amount of time. Here's how they are compensating us for, you know, for the beers. You know, here's the various steps. For example, this, I mean, with Fulton Market, with the little event that we threw on over the weekend, you know, we have an EMT tent, we have an ambulance on standby, we have, you know, they're on a separate radio channel with security, you know, so we have that set in place. So should something occur, we're able to respond, you know, and respond with the right measures.
Yeah, people don't seem to realize when you get all these, you know, folks together, and certainly in the wake of what went on yesterday in Vegas, you know.
Jesus.
It's a beer podcast, so, you know, I'd rather not get too much into it. But, you know, when you get massive amounts of people together, there are logistics that no one even thinks about. One is, you know, what if there's a pregnant lady who suddenly goes into labor, stuff like that. You know, these things happen at festivals. You have to plan for all of that kind of stuff.
No,
security is a whole nother.
That being said, when you go and you pull that insurance, they have a thing. What is your plan for this? What is your, a good example, not really beer related, but Lollapalooza a couple years ago, they had the tornado warnings. They had to evacuate. So they have to have an evac plan. Well, guess what? The evac plan is to go to the underground parking area, which, by the way, had to be empty of cars. So that takes away a lot of the parking for not just not just Grant Park area, but also downtown Chicago for a couple of days.
Yeah.
And who's going to compensate that parking lot owner?
Apparently, Pitchfork's evacuation plan is Kaiser Tiger, because that's where everyone goes when they evacuated Pitchfork.
This is where I come when I got to pee.
I had to bartend. It's been a little while. I'm a little rusty.
Oh, yeah?
Feeling the burn. We weren't ready. Yeah. It was great, though. We got a nice rush, and then everyone went back to the festival.
You have to have these things in place. And people always ask me what the, you know, as far as getting from point A to point B and starting an event, how do you do it? What are you trying to accomplish? And what do I need to put into play to accomplish that? You know, and I think location is so important and so key, but you also really have to understand what goes into prepping that location, you know, for if you know, you become that temporary shelter for folks that are trying to get out of the storm, then, hey, did I order enough toilet paper? Because guess what? That's going to happen. Do I have, you know what I mean? Things like
totally.
That.
Peeing is a major factor in a beer festival.
Did I think about, you know, condensing the food menu a little bit in order to accommodate the kitchen and make sure they can, you know, if we've got out of nowhere 100 tickets go in and they all want something, how am I making sure that they're getting, you know, the correct level of service?
Right.
You know, so it's, and that too, protect, you know, not protecting, making sure you're setting your coworkers up with the right tools to succeed, because unless the coworkers have what they need to succeed, then whatever you're going to do is going to fail.
Yeah.
You know, because in the end of the day, we're a set of hands, a set of eyes, but, you know, we're not the lifeblood of this. We're the utility busboys of this thing. We're here to help provide the support that everyone else needs, because we can't manage the entire thing at once.
Right.
So you have to have the right people, the right infrastructure.
And you do have to feed these people, because it's a beer festival. That's my biggest pet peeve, is showing up to these things and there's like two food trucks for 10,000 people. And you're like, you know,
that ain't gonna cut it.
Yeah. You're not going to eat that day, and you know you're drinking.
And that too. And then that's going to come back down the road.
Right.
You know, that, think about it. If you're not staying, just that the people aren't able to get water.
Yeah.
You know, it's because you're just consuming alcohol all day. That takes a toll on anyone, no matter if they played, you know, the polo or not.
Right.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. You're not polo. You're rugby.
That's
my bad.
Right.
That's my bad.
Polo.
Polo.
How would I
fit in the pants?
Ever. Poor horse.
Poor horse. Stallion, man. Yeah. Stallion.
Yeah, we need a Clydesdale out there.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we've talked about all the terrible things about beer festivals. How about the beer itself? Because I have noticed one thing, you know, 10, 15 years ago, there was a lot of reason for these breweries to show up to these beer fests. And, you know, they wanted to get craft beer out there and get their beer out there and get people used to drinking this more flavorful beer. Well, that's already kind of been accomplished and not really a worry anymore. Now it's, you know, it's more the small breweries who are, you know, wanting to get their name out there and stuff. How do you get the big guys who, you know, like the Three Floyds and the Half Acres and the Revolutions, who are quite honestly out of stocking people like me and you, to go, oh yeah, I'll send some kegs to this beer festival, even though I can't, you know, keep up with the supply from the bars itself.
I had one event.
I mean, what's their motivation to come to these beer fests?
Yeah, why?
Why?
And, you know, how does that develop their brand and their business?
Right.
Because at the end of the day, if they're not making money on this, they're all sleeping on their mom's couches.
Right. And they've got to dedicate a person or two, a tent, a jockey box.
Once again, that's infrastructure that's on their dime.
Right.
So what gets them out there? Uniqueness.
Yeah.
Being unique. I think that's being unique. Well, at the same time, not saying, hey, you know, unique and boutique events. They cost less to produce. It's a better atmosphere. They're easier to contain, control, to replicate. Similar to, you know, what Goose Clyburn had with the Belgian Fest, mm-hmm. you know, and with Stout Day. Stout Fest,
yeah.
You know, but I mean, so those events, yeah, what, they might have had 500, 600 heads there. Mm-hmm. So we weren't talking over 1,000 heads, but they were boutique-y. They were neighborhood. They developed, you know, into amazing little events, and they kind of got chewed up and spitting out when the larger events started coming to town. You know, so instead of a guest saying, hey, it's this Saturday, oh, I'm gonna go to Stout Fest. I'm going to spend, you know, my $40 on my ticket for Stout Fest, have a bite to eat at the pub, you know, this, that, or the other. Now folks are saying, hey, guess what? I'm going to spend this $40. I'm going to go down here to this event, you know, that has 150 beers. I think that in order to get some of the breweries that quite honestly, they don't need to sell their beer. It sells itself, and they're right. fortunate to be in that unique situation. So why do they choose to go to certain events with it being something more than a sales rep selling the beer into the event? Just a unique homegrown feel, taking it back to the grassroots and the reason that it started. I think a lot of folks are losing touch with that right now by saying, oh, I'm going to throw the mother load at you, bitches. Here right. it comes.
Right.
You know, and let's be honest about it, Patrick. Maybe you, because you're more stout of a man than I. But if I go somewhere and there's 150 beers, I might try 20 of them. And then I'm going to find a Pilsner that I like and start drinking that.
Right, right.
So we're seeing that, too. So a lot of places that, hey, send me the rear things. Send me this, that, and the other.
Well, I mean, you know, that is the allure to the consumer is here's my chance to have all of these different beers in front of me and taste, you know, 20 different beers in a day, where you don't necessarily get that opportunity just going to a bar.
But also, I mean, there are breweries that are still getting, you know, very creative, this, that, and the other. But a lot of the beers, you know, these folks know where the tap rooms are. Once again, we're dealing with an educated consumer now,
right.
not a consumer that's right. just, oh, you know, so they know when this is happening or when this is releasing. They know where they can go buy it. They know that they can go to the tap room and get a growler for $12 or $15. They already know the liquid. And how many variations of that liquid can you pump out until it just becomes, oh, here's another example.
Yeah, I mean, I do wonder what people's motivation are for going to these fests anymore. I've kind of lost mine, you know, but I'm not your average beer consumer. People are still showing up to these things, obviously.
Oh, no, people are. There's a definite draw, and I think that I'd like to see it go a little more boutique-y over the big bulk places. I think that, and we've also seen it turn... the tables turned about 3 or 4 years ago, I think, a good bit. You know, it's like if a bank sees a way to make a money on some new adventure, mm-hmm. they're going to start to invest capital in that, which they have done in a lot of, you know, a lot of breweries.
Yeah.
A lot of small breweries. And that's great because now a lot of our friends and you know, folks across the U.S. that we'll never meet, but, you know, they have the opportunity to set their sights and develop their business model and pursue their dreams. At the same time, as beer has developed, we've also seen the events develop. So guess what? Well, a bank's not going to sponsor an event. So you get private producers that start sponsoring it, which is great. You know, but that being said also, you know, how are you covering your operating costs there? And is that by thinning the mix, by bringing in a major sponsor, you know, that might be able to also help you with, you know, getting 10 brands in there. You know, so, hey, we'll put these 10, I'll buy these 10 brands worth of beer and you get your placements, you know, and in turn, there's some way that they balance that out. When it comes to private production over, what's the best way to word it? Private production over, business production.
Yeah.
We've seen it. We've seen a bit of a shift there, and you see it with, you know, you see it with everything. It's business.
It is. Yeah. It's getting big.
It's
gotten big.
And honestly, where does it go now? What's the allure? What's the next event? What's the newest concept? And I think that the newest thing is actually the old school thing. I think it's taking back to the bare bones of what was happening 20 years ago. Because now you have an educated consumer, not to bring that up again, but yeah. Guess what? They also want to know a little bit about the history of the beer, because you got folks just serving beer. You got volunteers just
people
pouring
not,
beers.
Yeah.
And so there's something to mention, that, you know, if you're talking about money or if you're talking about understanding the beer itself. You know, when you have, you know, over 100 volunteers in that room serving beers, who's training them on the beers?
Yeah, no one.
Do they have any clue that Three Floyds is approximately 27 or 28 miles in that direction from where we're sitting right now? That Goose on Fulton, you know, is right there. You know, Haymarket, how many we got in Chicago? 71, 74?
71.
71. So there you go. You know what I mean? So who knows? And today, if that beer is being served by an uneducated server, where's the real motivation for that brewery to go there?
Yeah, I mean,
this answers the question.
Yeah.
Because where's the motivation if that new consumer, that new beer buyer, isn't qualified to go into a beer bar, a restaurant, a Binny's, a Whole Foods, Chris's Place, the Beer Temple, West Lakeview, wherever you want to name, and say, hey, here's a new brewery, and I had their beer at this event. Do you have this? As opposed to just walking up and saying, here's a glass. There's one young man, and I won't name him because he looks a lot like me, and if he's listening, he's going to be pissed that I bring this up. He taught me something about 5 years ago at an event at Union Station. And before he was handing the guest the beer, he said, what is it? And the guy's like, I just want that one. No, well, what's the name of it? How are you going to be able to buy this beer down the road? You know, okay, so we are this brewery. Here's this, you know,
yeah,
this style that we have.
I've been to that Union Station Festival, by the way.
Slippery floors.
Yeah, that, and that one is a total drunken bro fest.
And once again, we've seen that kind of shift, because how old is that event now? That might be 5 years.
Yeah.
I think that might have been year one. And that person was literally saying, you know, but.
Well, and you get the guy who just wants the highest alcohol one.
And well,
Which one's highest ABV?
So how does the brewery, why does the brewery, who's honestly not making a great deal of money.
Right. This is where their motivation
beer,
disappears.
You know, so when that keg gets purchased, they might be seeing, you know, maybe 50% of whatever that purchase cost is, maybe, which is really not paying the nut.
Yeah.
Especially when you have your brand manager.
Yeah, they have to get some promotion.
Joshy Box,
yeah.
Your tent, this, that, and the other. So where's that turnaround on that?
They have to get some promotion out of this festival to make it worthwhile.
So, and that kind of, I think, somewhat answers your one question about how do you get breweries interested, is making sure that you're guaranteeing that their beers and their brand and their name is being, you know, represented correctly. Because you, in essence, as an event producer, you, in essence, become a brand ambassador for each single brewery that you are representing. And, you know, if a brewery owner walks into an event and the person serving their liquid, their beer is not, you know, oh, I've got no fucking clue what this brewery is. They just put me in front of this box to serve beers. I've never served a beer before.
Well, isn't that what happens at JBF?
I'm not qualified to answer that question.
That means yes, ladies and gentlemen. That means yes. Yeah, you know, very rare is it that, you know, a representative of the brewery is back there pouring, much less the brewer, but, you know, back in the day, that was the norm.
But what happens then? Yes, exactly. So if we dial it back, you know, I think there's so much potential in this city to have small boutique events. It could be neighborhood. It could be based on location, you know, with...
Yeah,
and once again, not. And are you going to make a shit ton of money on it? No, but more of a beer appreciation type situation, as opposed to saying, oh, you know, here's every single SKU. Guess what you need? If you bring 200 kegs to an event, you need a lot of infrastructure, you know, and you can make it. You can do so much more, and you could do it four times. And probably have a similar return on investment if you do it with the right venue, the right product, of course, giving it some heart and soul again instead of cookie cutter.
Yeah, I agree. I do. Some of them are getting way too specific, though.
And, oh yeah,
you know, like you know, you go to. I mean.
Well, I saw their
Phobab is in danger of it. It's all barrel aged beer. You can't really get anything else.
And that you have to have a different. It, and I appreciate and respect everything that event is and will become. And it's amazing. It's wonderful to watch that event grow. But end of day, there's only so much barrel aged beer that anyone can drink.
Right. Same with sour beer. And you know, now there's all these sour fests coming up.
So when are we doing the New England IPA Fest here at Kaiser Tiger?
Oh, Gary, we're not talking about New England IPA.
That means yes.
You know, the sad thing is it would be fucking packed. There'd be lines everywhere.
I'm going to quote Pete Crowley on this. Hazy is lazy.
And when it rhymes, it's true.
That's yep.
That's the restaurant rule. All right. I've got one more question for you, and just a fun one. You have been to many, many, many more beer festivals than I have, and I've been to a fair share. What's the craziest shit you've ever seen go down with drunk people at a beer fest?
Ooh.
Oh, he's got to think about it.
No. Saw someone attempting to hotwire an ambulance.
Oh yeah, attempting. So they were not successful.
No, but then they got out of the ambulance to go reload their beer before getting back in the ambulance.
Well,
and it was just what the fuck? Wait,
that makes sense.
And the security was there. The cops were there.
Yeah,
and they're like, this guy's not even close to. He's not doing any damage to anything. It's just kind of we're just watching this at this point, and we're all scratching our heads. And the guy literally got out. Went, got another serving of beer, and went back into the ambulance to try and, we don't know if he was trying to work the lights or whatever, and of course he ended up getting some assistance in order to leave on a, you know, couple days probably of a state-paid vacation. But that was a pretty good one. I once found a coworker who might have been overserved.
Let's hope.
Asleep in the dumpster.
In the dumpster?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a terrible place to sleep.
Well, fortunately, he woke up when because this is a dumpster. This is a, you know, a 30-yard dumpster.
Oh, a big one.
How he got in there, we don't know, because he's about a 5'6" Asian gentleman.
Oh, I think I know who this is.
And so bags started getting lobbed in. What the fuck? Like, what was that? That was good.
Well, if it's who I think it is, he did that on purpose. He didn't care.
He's an amazing individual.
He is, yeah.
No, I mean, and any given Sunday, though, it's. I guess that's the thing, too. It's like every single event, one of the fun things is kind of like, what the fuck are we going to deal with today? So you never know. And that's part of the fun of beer. You never know what's going to happen next.
That is. That's true. It's true. I enjoy watching drunk people. It's more than a hobby.
I'll drink to that.
Yeah. Cheers.
Cheers, buddy.
So what do you got going on, Gary? Give us a little wrap-up. What's happening at the goat restaurants? Anything? Any festivals coming up?
You know what?
It's just business as usual?
At this point, you just kind of...
Got done with the big one.
It's Rocky III. Just kind of roll with the punches and keep standing until you get through it. I mean, of course, FOBAB's coming up.
Yeah, that's in November, right? What's the date of that? November
10 and 11, I think.
10 and 11, yeah.
GABF is this weekend. I will not be going this year. It's one of those things. I love it. I respect it. When I go to Denver, it's going to be a $100 round-trip plane ticket, and I'm going to be able to actually walk around town and enjoy some beers and some food. What about you? What do you got?
Oh, geez. With FOBAB coming up, you know, we have our annual Dice of Doom.
Yes.
Here at Kaiser Tiger. So in between the two sessions there, we do this ridiculous event with Three Floyds where we have Malort Barrel Age Dark Lord and Dark Lord Barrel Aged Malort. Does that make sense? So we have Dark Lord from Three Floyds that's been aged in a barrel that previously had Malort, and then we have Malort that was aged in a barrel that previously had Dark Lord. And you roll a giant 20-sided Dungeons & Dragons die and win a prize or a punishment, depending on how you look at Malort.
Well, I will say that is boutique-y as fuck.
That's what having a bunch of beers with the Three Floyds people and coming up with the stupidest ideas you can, and the Malort people, Sam from Malort, who gets mentioned on this podcast quite often. I'm going to have him on.
Yeah,
but
I'm not sitting down for that one. That's not drinking an IPA.
It's a fun one. It's a fun one.
Oh, getting bad goosebumps thinking about it.
So we have that going on. A few other beer festivals at both places. What's Patty's got? A keg of unfiltered Pilsner Urquell coming.
Oh, when's that go on?
November. I want to say it's the Saturday of FOBAB as well. Yeah, it's the same day as Dice of Doom. Yeah, so Dice of Doom. So I'm going to do Dice of Doom.
Down.
Yeah, okay. And then I'm going to go drink unfiltered Pilsner at Patty Long's. It's a really tough life I lead.
I'm going to call you Sunday morning at like 5 a.m. You'll probably be
I'll probably be going to bed. Yeah, probably be leaving the karaoke bar around then.
Ooh, now I can do that. Now that would be a good beer event.
Beer karaoke?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's been done. I've been to a few
major,
of those.
You know, a beer tasting and karaoke. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Gary, thanks so much for filling in for Bruce while he does his job. And, you know, this was a lot of fun. I appreciate it. If I ever do a festival out front here in Kaiser Tiger, you're the first person I'm calling, by the way.
And I'll be the first person running. You let me know. You know I'm here.
I'll track you down.
Can't get rid of me.
No doubt. All right. Thank everyone for listening, downloading. Please send your comments. You can tweet at Gary. He is very active on the social media, aren't you? What's your Twitter? Do you not want to reveal it? Don't worry. No one's
Chicago
listening.
Chicago Cousin.
Chicago Cousin. That's it.
I'm from North Carolina.
I am at Patty Longs. I don't tweet much, but I will get back to you. And thanks for listening.
Thank you.